Okay. So, this is going to be, so those who have seen me before here, it's more of the same, of course, every time. And which is good, that's exactly right. Because the instructions for meditation are actually very simple, and meditation is supposed to be very straightforward, very easy, very relaxing. And you can imagine the general idea of meditation is to watch your breath, right? What, in principle, in theory, what could be more easy than watching your breath? The breath is always there. All you have to do is place your attention on the natural phenomenon which is already happening within you. That's all you have to do, right? Nothing could be more easy than that, you think, until you try it, and you actually find out it often doesn't work. And the reason why it doesn't work is not because it's difficult, right? It's just very, very straightforward. The reason why it doesn't work is because basically your mind is not in the right space. Your mind isn't ready to be able to do something as simple as just watching the breath. So the whole idea of meditation is to get your mind set, right? Get your mind in the right framework, in the right attitude. And once that attitude is there, once the framework is there, then it becomes actually incredibly easy to watch the breath. So how do we get that frame, how do we get that attitude right? And one of the first things about meditation is to understand that it is supposed to be a happy experience. You're supposed to enjoy it, right? If you sit there and you feel terrible about what's going on, you know something isn't going right. And I should say that straight away. If you don't enjoy what you're doing, in particular if you feel bad about the meditation, there has been some research about some people feeling panicky. They close their eyes and start to feel panic, right? That's terrible. That's causing more suffering for yourself. It's supposed to be a happy feeling. So if you find that you find you're becoming uncomfortable, you find you're becoming a bit panicky, or something isn't right, then for goodness sake, open your eyes and do something else. Don't just stick with that and think it's okay. It's not really okay at that stage. So open your eyes and then do something else. Just look around you and so you can calm down and you can feel at ease again. So the whole process of meditation should be one whereby from where you start off, you should gradually feel more and more peaceful, right? More and more at ease, more and more relaxed, more and more happy, more and more joyful, all of these kind of things. If that is happening, great. If the opposite is happening, you're feeling more and more angry, right? Or more and more, whatever it is, then you know, okay, something isn't going quite right. So I've got to kind of shift my attitude, or shift the way I'm doing these things. So this is so important, because otherwise, so many people, they started off meditation practice, and they didn't get the right results, and things went really badly wrong, and they were turned off for life, right? And this beautiful thing, which has this incredible potential to basically, ultimately give you almost access to the meaning of life itself. That's what I say anyway. So if it has that potential, you don't want to destroy that potential at the very outset. So make sure that you are careful with how you do the practice. So to do this, first of all, you sit down and you sit comfortably, right? There's no need to have any kind of yogic posture with your kind of in the lotus position or anything like that. You can sit as comfortably as you like. It's certainly not going to be too comfortable to sit in these chairs. So sit comfortably and start off by just feeling your body, right? Feeling that you're nice and comfortable. The meditation here only lasts for about half an hour, so it shouldn't be too hard. But generally speaking, sitting with the soles of your feet flat on the floor, right? And in the position where the body is kind of self-sustaining. You don't have to do anything with the body after you sit down. Fairly straight in the back, leaning back against the backrest. And you just feel really nice and at ease and comfortable in the body. That's the first thing. And this is actually often the place where people go wrong. Already there at this particular stage. And often they think that once you sit down and you've found a good posture, you have to sit in that posture for the rest of the meditation. But that is not necessarily the case. If you find that you become uncomfortable anywhere, it doesn't, your mind is going to the body all the time because there is a discomfort there, and just shift your posture a little bit. And then you feel much better straight away. So don't be afraid of moving a little bit during the meditation practice. That's perfectly fine. And once the body is comfortable, the next thing to do is to make sure that you are relaxed and you are at ease. And to do that, all you have to do is to stay with the physical feeling of the body itself. So you stay with the body. You feel what the body feels like. Is there any tension anywhere? Is there anywhere where you don't feel 100% relaxed? And most people, feel some sense of tension somewhere in the body. This is the natural consequence of living life, right? Life tends to be a little bit stressful. We tend to go through situations that are a little bit difficult every single day, right? It's always like that. And that tends to leave a residue in the body. Tensions in the stomach region, tensions in the shoulders, wherever it is. And even if there isn't any obvious tension, once your mindfulness, once your awareness becomes more powerful, you start to feel that there are subtle tensions in the body almost all the time, almost always there. So your purpose here is to just to calm yourself down, to become more relaxed than maybe you have ever been in your life before, right? So really, really relaxed, feeling really, really at ease. And after a while, as you do that, as you keep on focusing on the body, just having a good attitude towards yourself, feeling kindness and compassion towards yourself, and as you do that, you find the body becomes so light, right? It becomes so unproblematic. It's almost as if the body tends to disappear. And this is what the point you're trying to get to. The body is so easy, feeling so good, that it kind of disappears into the background. And this is almost like, if you can call this the first benefit of meditation practice, when the body becomes very easy. And what happens when the body is pleasurable, when the body feels relaxed, it's natural for the mind to come into the present moment. Why? Because the present moment is nice. If the present moment is nice, it's easy to stay in the present moment. So this is the whole thing, right? And this is what mindfulness is all about. We hear this mindfulness word all the time. Basically, it is about the ability to stay in the present moment and to be with whatever is happening right here and right now. But to be able to do that, the present moment has to be the pleasant moment. This is one of Ajahn Brahm's coinages. He likes to say, this is the way he likes to teach the Dhamma. So for the present moment to be happy, you have to have a sense of pleasure right here and right now. So when the body relaxes, when you feel at ease, that is exactly what happens. And then mindfulness becomes possible. If you try to force your mind to use your willpower to come into the present moment, you're going to fail. It has to be a natural process. When it happens all by itself, it's very, very easy, very relaxing, very peaceful. And it feels, you know that you're on the right track. You feel yourself becoming more aware, and you can see that meditation happens almost as a matter of course. So these are the two first things, right? Physically feeling at ease in the body, or feeling the body having no pain, and then feeling at ease in the whole physical body. And one of the important points about this, is the fact, of course, that body and mind are very connected to each other. And that's why if you have a stressful day, right, and you feel stressed, it has effects on the body. So now by focusing on the body, by unstressing the physical body, you are also unstressing the mind because of that connection between the two. So it's an indirect way of getting access to the mind and making the mind feel at ease and relaxed. So doing this by focusing on the body itself. Right? So fairly straightforward. I'll take you through in a guided meditation in a minute so you can see how this actually works in practice. So these are the two things. The third thing, and this is probably the most important thing of all in the meditation practice, is to have the right attitude. Right? So you come in here and the right attitude means the attitude of being relatively positive, right? Having at least moving towards more positivity. Having an attitude maybe of gratitude. Gratitude can be a very powerful attitude. If you feel grateful, think, wow, what a wonderful opportunity to be here, right? What a wonderful thing that is. How difficult, isn't it, to find a group like this in the world where people come together just to be peaceful, just to meditate, these things. It's rare, right? You think, wow, how wonderful it is that I have this opportunity. And when you have a gratitude, that's a beautiful attitude which carries you forward in your meditation practice. So having a sense of gratitude, having a sense of gladness, having a sense of positivity, having a sense of friendship with the people around you, having a sense of compassion perhaps, right? We're talking about loving kindness in Buddhism. All of these things are very powerful attitudes. So this is one of the ways to guide your mind in that direction. And when you guide your mind in that direction, you find that the meditation becomes possible. If you feel negative, right, you're coming from work, whatever, first of all, try to relax. Try just to sitting here and just enjoying being here. And the negativity may fade away as a consequence. If it doesn't, then you have to do something else, like some kind of deliberate change in your attitude to get away from the negativity, like focusing on something positive or just talking about now, that already will move the attitude in the right direction. But one of the most difficult things with meditation practice is the problem with the mind wandering around, right? Often we may not feel particularly negative or anything like that, but the mind just moves all over the place. It thinks about what I'm going to do afterwards, what I did before, you know, what I'm going to do tomorrow, what I'm going to do next year, what I'm going to do on my holidays, and all these kind of things, right? So this is one of the biggest problems with meditation practice, and almost everybody has a problem with a wandering mind. So how do you deal with that? And one of the very powerful ways of dealing with that is to make the meditation something that is important in your life, right? Give meditation practice priority. Understand that this is something special you're doing here, right? If you give meditation priority, all that other stuff will fade by the wayside. It doesn't matter anymore. What is important to you, that's where the mind tends to go. And the reason why it goes back home, or it goes to dinner, or it goes to all this other stuff you have to do, is because you think that is important, right? I'm not saying you're bad because you think that. Everybody makes this mistake, right? It's just life. It's perfectly okay. I'm just saying this is a tendency in the human mind. So what you have to do is to make this opportunity, this chance, wow, this is such a wonderful opportunity. Let me not waste this opportunity I have right here this evening to do this little bit of meditation practice. And one of the ways that I like to think, when I go back to my little hut in the forest at Bodhinyana Monastery, I sit down, I cross my legs, and I close my eyes, and I remind myself that this is what I'm really living for. When I sit here, when I close my eyes, I come the closest I ever do to the meaning of life itself. What is the meaning of life? The meaning of life, you know, if you look inside of yourself, you're always striving to find something in the world, right? Finding happiness. All our striving is a moving towards happiness and a movement away from suffering. Everything we do is about that. And now you come in meditation, and when the meditation goes well, when the meditation becomes peaceful, when the meditation is joyful and happy, you feel a sort of contentment, the sort of happiness, the sort of fulfillment that normally you never ever experience otherwise in your life. So this is where you come the closest to that thing that you've always been searching for, right? This is where it happens. So because it happens here, now this is the most important thing. Everything else in your life is about this, right? This is not to support the rest of your life. The rest of your life is to support this. This is the most powerful thing. Now, if you think like that, if you understand that everything else is to support this, this is not to support everything else. If you have that attitude, then you're not going to think about all the other stuff, because you understand it's not really important. It's only important insofar as it makes the meditation more easy, or it makes the meditation more powerful. Only to that extent is everything else in your life important. Now, okay, some of you who come for the first time, you right there, you may think I'm completely nuts. That's okay, that's fine. But for me, that is the truth. Because in meditation, you can find something, a kind of level of truth, a level of happiness and contentment that normally you cannot find anywhere else in life. So this is just some ideas about attitude and how to think about the meditation practice. And if you can do a little bit of that, I think you will find your meditation goes much better here. Okay, short introduction. Now let us try the real deal, as they say. So let's see what happens. So just close your eyes. And once you have closed your eyes, you find that by shutting out the world, you can feel your body much better. So just start off by feeling just the whether your body is comfortable or not, where you're sitting right now. And if you have to make any adjustments, try to do those at the beginning. just learn, first of all, just to feel the body, feel what the body feels like. And again, if you have any pains anywhere, you're not quite sitting in quite in the right way, then just shift your posture a little bit until you're nice and comfortable there. If at any point during this meditation you feel a sense of lack of balance or a sense of confusion or a sense of whatever it is, something isn't quite right, then just open your eyes and just sit there and just enjoy meditation with your eyes open instead. Then, once your body is relatively comfortable, and find out whether there is any tensions anywhere, anything which has to be released, so you can feel really relaxed. So start off perhaps by feeling your stomach region. Often the tension accumulates in the stomach, and if it does, just take a few deep breaths, and with the out breath, allow all the muscles and everything just to relax. Just keep on relaxing your body. Just have a general awareness over your whole body. And when you have that general awareness, you will see those areas where the body isn't quite relaxed. And wherever it isn't quite relaxed, just imagine yourself breathing in through that area. And then as you breathe in, all the tension dissipates as you breathe out. just keep the focus on the body. And as you do this, any area which isn't quite relaxed, have a very gentle and kind attention on that area. With that gentleness and kindness usually comes relaxation, because the body, everything in the world, responds well to kindness. So does your own body and mind. So be gentle towards yourself, be kind towards yourself, place your attention on that area which isn't relaxed. Just encourage yourself, just tiny little bit. Feel at ease, feel at peace. What a wonderful thing it is to be here. When you hear the noises outside, somebody coughing and sputtering like that, the best attitude to have is one of compassion. It's always difficult to sit in a group and start to cough, so have compassion towards them. And when you have that sort of compassion towards the people around you, you're actually enhancing your meditation. Just keep on feeling your body. The idea here is to get to a place of peace, where the body feels more relaxed and you can't have, and you can't remember having felt in a long, long time, until the body becomes like your tuft or cotton, something very light, something very easy. Now again, the attitude is so important here. So sometimes all you have to do is to have a sense of gratitude towards yourself. Thank you, body, for looking after me for all these years. I've been driving you around like a slave almost, and you're always obeying my command all the time. Thank you for supporting me all this time. Now it is my turn to look after you. May you be relaxed. May you be at ease. If you find the relaxation is working for you, you're feeling more at ease, you're feeling better about yourself, you also tend to find that your mind tends to come more into the present moment. Your mind is also relaxing, your mind is also at ease. And when that happens, then the next step of the meditation practice is just to allow things to be for a while, learning how to be mindful, learning how to be aware. And this part of the practice is really just sitting back and allowing things to be. And this, if you can do this, you're increasing your mindfulness even further. And to be able to do this, there is nothing right or wrong. There's nothing to be judged at this stage of the practice. Just allow things to be. If you feel tired, it's okay. If you feel a bit restless, that is fine too. If your mind wants to think, allowing to think. Your job is just to be there with yourself, and allowing your mind to play with itself for a while. point of this part of the meditation is to learn to be passive, just to observe things as they are. And when you learn to be passive, you find out how much doing you do in your life, how much problems, how much suffering it is to always do things. And just to sit back and be passive, how beautiful and nice and how peaceful it is for once not to do anything at all in your whole life. All you do is observe. All you do is to be aware. You are sitting there just trying to be aware of what is happening. Sometimes you need to energize yourself a little bit And to get that energy, all you have to do is just to switch your attitude a little bit to something a bit more positive, a bit more beautiful. And as you do that, you find the energy arising in your mind. And a wonderful way to do that is just to think very simply, what a wonderful opportunity it is to be here in the Armoury group on a Tuesday night. This refuge, this safe haven from the world around us, this beautiful place where we can actually learn something about the real meaning of life itself, and maybe even experience that in our own life. What a wonderful thing that is. Thank you to all the friends around me here today. Thank you for being here. Thank you for organizing this. Thank you for making this possible. What a wonderful thing it is. Towards the end of this meditation, you can try, if you wish, if you feel relaxed, you feel at ease, and you feel in the right frame of mind, you can try very gently to place your attention on your breath. As you are breathing very gently, it's as if you are resting your attention on the breath, using no force, using no willpower, just allowing it to be there. And if it disappears, that is fine. If it comes back, that is good too. A very gentle attention on the breath. concentration. And the very last thing I'd like you to do is just to look back. Look back on the process that happened over the last half an hour and ask yourself, how do you feel now compared to how you felt when you started off? Do you feel better? Do you feel more relaxed? Do you feel the same? What has happened during this process? And if there has been a change, then ask yourself how that change came about. What perceptions have you developed? What letting go have you been doing during this process? How did it all occur? And as you start to understand how it all occurred, you start to be able to take charge of your own meditation practice. What a wonderful thing that is. So just reflect for a few seconds on what has happened. That's the end of the meditation, so please come out. Okay, so did anybody enjoy the meditation? Did anybody here? Okay, good. It is, isn't it? Yeah, it is a kind of escape. Yeah, it's a good kind of escape. It's a positive escape.
Breathing slows down.
Yeah.
And you feel how you're sort of ready to drift on.
Yeah, great. Wonderful, yeah. Excellent, yeah. What about the beginner there? Did it work for you or was it? Yeah. Okay, good. Okay. Anybody have any other things they like to bring up? Anybody have any really bad experiences or problems they don't want to talk about perhaps? Anything I should have mentioned that anybody have? Anything which hasn't been covered? Anybody fall asleep? Anybody feel tired? Surely somebody felt tired, that's always the case. The body relaxes.
You
do feel tired.
You know.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Because often you keep yourself going, right? In ordinary life, you kind of push yourself. Then when you start to relax, you fall asleep. It's nature of things. Yeah. No, exactly. That's exactly what happens. So what should you do when you start to fall asleep? Should you? What is there? Just enjoy it.
Depends where you are.
Yeah. Now it's always if you fall asleep, that's always fine, that's always good. I think it's perfectly okay. If I hear people snoring in the meditation, I think, well, good on you. It's great, you know. It means you're relaxed, you're not too self-conscious, you don't care what other people think, which is great. We shouldn't really do that, that's good. So, okay, anything else? What about all the kids over there? Did you enjoy it? Did it work? Yeah, kind of, not really? Okay. No, as long as you know, you're still there, at least that's a good sign. So that's no problem. Anything else? Anybody want to bring up anything else? No? Yes, over there. Yeah. Not a nice one.
How do you begin to understand and accept the suicide in the family?
Oh, okay. How do you begin to accept and understand suicide in your family? Okay. Well, so now we're getting really serious, right? It's not nice. It's a good question. It's a great question. You know, these things are important issues, and everybody should have the right attitude towards these things, because it can happen to anybody. Just not to some people. I had one of my best friends from university. A couple of years ago, his son committed suicide, and 6 months later, his wife committed suicide. Right, one after the other. That's pretty traumatic. Yeah, when that happens. So I sent him a few emails. Said, listen, there are ways of dealing even with this, you know. And he was very grateful for that. But the first thing is to understand that it's nobody's fault, right? This is kind of the first thing here. And almost everybody tends to blame themselves, especially when somebody close to them commits suicide. So the first thing is to understand that these things just tend to happen because of the situation that person happens to be in. There are certain pressures on them, certain things from the past that come together. And when they come together in the present moment, these things often happen. It's nobody's fault. It's nothing else. We often think, maybe I could have done something different, right? That's often what people think. But the reality is that is just when you look into the past, you're seeing the past with blinkered vision. You don't see the past as it was. And that's why you think you could have done something different. The chances are you couldn't do anything different. Because in the past, you were just there. You did exactly what you could do. And that's what you did. And now, later on, you think back, that is actually a distorted vision of reality. So this is the first thing. It isn't actually anybody's fault. One of the things from the Buddhist point of view, of course, is that you have the idea of rebirth, right? So you go on from life to life. And sometimes what happens is that people, sometimes they carry a tendency for suicide with them from one life to the next one. The tendency may already be there. And for some people, committing suicide is easier than it is for other people. For some people, it's almost unthinkable. But for some people, it actually is easier because they already have that tendency there. So these are the kind of things that come together. And when things come together in the wrong way, then these things happen. So this is the, this I think is the most important thing, to learn that actually it is nobody's fault. And when you can do that, when you can see it in the right way, understand that we are all conditioned beings, we're not really in control of things, we think we are in control, but actually it tends to be a massive delusion. We have far, far less control than we like to think. And when we start to understand how conditioned we are, it becomes possible to let go. This is the first thing here. And the second thing is to remember that suicide isn't necessarily bad, right? Where is that person now? You just don't know where they are. They committed suicide. Maybe they went through very, very difficult things. Had a very hard time. And when you go through a very hard time and you commit suicide, it is possible that where they are afterwards, you know, I am a firm... Okay, this is the announcement we're talking about. Let's hold on a second, just two. It's more, isn't it?
No, that's it.
That's it. Okay, that's it. Okay, great. Yeah. So the other thing is to remember that death, from a Buddhist point of view, is not in itself, is not a bad thing. Death is just a transition, right? Life is always about going through transitions. You go from being single to being married, you go from being a lay person to being a monk, right? And all these kind of transitions that we go through in life. And death is just another transition. It's just a moving on. It's not something which in itself is bad, good or bad. If you're brought up with a Christian way of looking at the world, death tends to be looked upon as bad, because your life is given by God and then it's taken away, right? So kind of it's a bad thing. But in Buddhism, it's just another transition. It's not bad nor good in its own right. So what matters is if that person who has passed away, if they were a good person, if they had a good heart, if they are now perhaps released from some of that suffering, it may be a good thing, right? Maybe it isn't a bad thing at all. Maybe now their new life, wherever they might be now, might be much better than what they had before. So there isn't necessarily any grounds for sadness. Often the reason we grieve when somebody dies is because of our attachment to that person, right? To some extent, it is... I know this as well from my own experience, is that when somebody dies in my family, I can sit, if I feel sad about that, actually, when I think back upon it, I think, wait a minute, why am I sad? What am I actually grieving about? I recognize, actually, it's my own loss which is the problem. It's not actually the death of the person. So this is the other thing, is to understand that if they're happy, right? If they're okay where they are now, why be so sad? Instead of being sad, sit down when you do your meditation practice, when you feel a little bit more peaceful, sit down and just say, wherever you are now, may you be happy, may you be well, right? May you move on into the future. Point number three, and this is one of the ways of dealing with perhaps, you know, this idea of feeling guilty about I could have done things differently in the past, is to also ask for forgiveness from that person. One of the ideas in Buddhism, again, is the idea if somebody may still be around after they pass away, because of attachments to family or friends or whatever, they may still be around. So one can ask that person for forgiveness and say, if I did anything wrong in the past, if I made any mistakes, please forgive me for anything I may have done. And also say at the same time, give them forgiveness at the same time, right? I too forgive you for any hurt you may have done towards me. My body, speech, and mind, whether it was intentional or unintentional, whatever words you want to use, I too forgive you for that. And if they are still around, it is a real kind of forgiveness, right? It's not just some kind of fantasy thing, it actually is real. They might be there, they might hear what you say. And if they take that on board, it actually has an effect, right? And then when you think it has an effect on them, it may also have an effect on you, right? So this is the way. I'm not sure if this is a personal question or whether it's for a friend of yours or whatever, but those are the three things that I would recommend. It's nobody's fault, right? It is not necessarily bad at all. It may sometimes it's a good thing, right? Number three, try to do some kind of forgiveness to relieve some of the pain and the problems that are there. Okay? So, yeah. Yes, sir?
Hello, I've been reading articles on impermanence. Can you speak a little bit about that?
About impermanence? Yeah. Things are impermanent. Yeah.
Impermanent.
Impermanent, sure. Yeah, okay. Impermanent. So, I think this is a core, now we're getting to core Buddhist teachings, right? Really, kind of the real deal. So that's good. That's a good question. So the idea of impermanence in Buddhism, I think one of the important things is to make it practical, right? Make it something which actually touches upon you, where you feel that it actually has an effect on your life. It's very easy to make this very theoretical, right? The five aggregates are impermanent. Five aggregates are impermanent. Okay, you can sort of understand that if you think about it, but it tends to be a bit theoretical. So make it very practical. So one of the ways that I like to think about impermanence is to remember death. I find that is one of the best ways. Now, it's not for everybody. Some people find it very difficult to have any concept of their own death. But that is one of the most obvious moments when things are impermanent, right? So the Buddha says, very interesting, that everybody should really try to contemplate death. Whether you are a layperson or a monastic doesn't make any difference, because it tends to set things straight and it tends to kind of sort things out. Because when you die, what is impermanent? Pretty much everything. You have to give up everything you own, right? That's the first thing. You have to obviously give up all the relationships you have, all the people in your life, whether they are friends or family members, right? That's a lot already. Everything you own and all your friends and family, boy, that's a lot, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea here is that once you remember that these things are impermanent, is that you start to view these things a bit differently. You realize that, okay, I shouldn't really be too attached, right? If I attach enormously to these things and I know that they're going to be taken away from me, I'm asking for suffering. Right? It's a completely different view from what most people have. Most people say, of course I must attach to some of my family members, right? From a Buddhist point of view, well, okay, you know, of course we want to love them, we want to be kind to them, we want to do all the right things, but if you are too attached, you're going to suffer, and just to understand that much. So remember that even the people closest to you in your life, eventually they're going to have to go. Okay, so usually what it means actually means to treat them even better, right? Because you get more distance, you get more clarity, and because of that you have even greater ability to treat them in the right way. It doesn't mean you become a cold-hearted and kind of, you know, terrible person, anything like that at all. You actually become even better. So, possessions, right? Family members, friends. Third thing that you have to let go of when you die is your body, right? Body has to go, okay? So that often is difficult, right? Whenever we have a pain in the body, all these kind of things, it is actually hard to deal with that, to see it as something. Actually, it is just kind of earth, water, whatever is made up of these things. When it dies, it's all going to go back to earth and water and air. right? That's the reality of the body. It comes together, like kind of congeals together when you start growing in your mother's womb, and eventually it becomes this big body, and then eventually goes back again to kind of the elements, right? Comes together and goes back again. And when you think of the body like that, this actually is one of the standard contemplations in body contemplations in Buddhism, is the idea of seeing your body in terms of the four elements: earth, water, air, and fire. Right? Fire is the heat in the body, and then the other elements are more obvious. So remember that the body comes from all the elements around us, and it goes back to that. Nothing really you can hold on to, right? And while we live, it's changing all the time. Usually for the worse, right? Because it gets worse and worse the longer you live. And that's okay. There's no problem with that. And so you detach a little bit from the body. You don't worry so much about the body. And the last thing that we also have to get rid of, or also disappears when we die, is all the things we identify in this life. So much of your identity is bound up with this world, right? What is our identity? It is things like what nationality you are, right? It is what kind of economic conditions you have in your life, right? What kind of education you have, what kind of friends, kind of circles you move in, right? All of these things, what kind of relationship you have in a family, all of these things identify us as a human being. This is who I am. I have this identity. And when you die, because of all of those things are bound up with this life, right here, right now, you have to call, all that too has to go, right? So all your identity has to go as well. You kind of, you lose a lot, not much left after that. So,
it doesn't
leave very much, right?
A pair of shoes might
be. You have to go of those as well, actually. But no. So what all of this means, of course, is that you have to build up something that you know that you take with you. And what is it that you take with you? Well, it is basically your own mind. The mind which is free from all the things of this world. Like you sang just now, when you meditate, you're feeling peaceful. You're feeling like you've been transported into another world, right? That's the kind of thing. When you are there, you are no longer identifying with anything at that point. You don't really have, the body starts to disappear, right? So all of those things in the world are actually disappearing. So in a sense, you are dying in a sense, right? And it's good, isn't it? So dying is quite nice. That's what you're finding out right there. So dying is a good thing. You're disappearing from all of these things. And those qualities that you find in a meditation practice, the qualities of heart that you have in ordinary life, the way you deal with other people, right? Your kindness, your compassion, your understanding, your peace, all of these things. These are the things that you will carry with you into the future, that will take with you. So because of that, that's where you should invest, right? Invest in those things that you take with you. Don't invest in the stuff that will have to go by the wayside anyway. So this is one way of looking at impermanence, right? So this is just one way. And I think, for me, it is the most powerful way. And it is very powerful because the Buddha talks about this all the time. When you read about the Buddha, this is a very important part of the life of a Buddhist, to have that reflection all the time. And when you do that, it kind of puts your priorities straight, right? What actually is important in life? What really matters? Come to the Amre group. Don't miss a single session, right? That's the kind of thing that you start to remember. Whenever you feel a bit down, listen to a good talk or whatever it is, and to kind of lift you up and to kind of carry you forward. So, yeah. Anyway, I'll stop with that. That's might be enough. But yeah. Rachel, yeah.
We've got a lot of children here tonight, about eight of them. Can you make any comments about meditation for children?
Meditation for children? Gee, that's
I'm
something.
Sure the adults
okay.
will all benefit.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, okay. All right. So,
this is
really being put on the spot, actually.
I don't know if they're all there. Some of them have gone, but
yeah,
I know we've got at least
not there. Okay.
There's eight of them.
Eight of them. Great. So, okay.
Or so just how they could practice away from here.
There are some very nice talks about meditation practice for all kinds of ages, right? Basically, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter if you are young or you are old or you are ancient or whatever. Whatever age, it's basically the same thing you're trying to do, right? Which is the nice thing here. So the most important thing about meditation is just to enjoy it, right? When you sit down, it is about how you prepare your mind, what you think about. And one of the things that you often can think about is just think about a peaceful situation. Everybody can do this. Think about a time in your life when you were very peaceful, right? You were somewhere where it was very beautiful. You were maybe sitting outside, maybe sitting on the beach or looking up in the sky, seeing something beautiful, and you feel very relaxed and you feel very at ease. And you bring that idea back in your mind, right? You think about that. You think about this very peaceful scenery, very seeing the blue sky, seeing a few clouds drifting across, and see by using the right kind of idea, see that makes you feel peaceful and relaxed. You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. It's all about. It doesn't matter what you do. Do anything which makes you peaceful and relaxed, basically. As long as you feel at ease, you feel relaxed, you feel good about yourself. That's really all it is about. So sometimes you have to find the right meditation teacher. I'm not sure if I'm any good for you, but if you find the right one, he will make you feel just about right. Do you do meditation in school at all? Have you done meditation in school? Haven't? Okay. You have in school, really? Okay. What is it? What do they call it? Sometimes they call it quiet time. Have you done anything like that? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. 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 That's wonderful. That's great. Yeah. That's excellent. So yeah. Anyway, it's all about having the right image, right? The image which makes you peaceful. When you have the image that makes you peaceful in the mind, when you feel really relaxed, you feel at ease, right? You can just sit there and just feel at ease, and you can just enjoy that and have a good time. That's the idea. So, yeah. That's how it goes.
There's a school in Aotearoa in New Zealand which teaches the kids meditation.
Yeah.
Kids are about 8, 10 years old.
That's great, yeah.
And they do meditation.
Yeah.
Mindfulness.
Yeah. That's good, yeah. So, yeah. Okay, anything else? Yes?
Can you use meditation to dredge up long-forgotten memories?
To do it on purpose, you mean?
Yeah. Dig them out again if you want to try and remember stuff.
You can, yeah, you can. This is one of the.
I don't mean past life regression, but you chump that as well. I mean, stuff that's happened, say, in the last 60 years.
Sure, you can do that, yeah. It's actually a natural consequence of meditation practice. It happens almost by default. This is one of the things when you become more peaceful, your mind becomes more aware in the present moment. That actually enables you to remember things in the past. There is another nice teaching by the Buddha where there's this. Brahmin, the Brahmins in India at that time, they were the people, they would teach all these mantras and that kind of stuff. So they had to memorize all these things. And this Brahmin, he goes to the Buddha and says, well, sometimes I can't remember anything, right? I can't even remember what I remembered yesterday, far less what I was taught 20 years ago or whatever. All the times I can remember absolutely everything. I can remember 20 years back, no problem. You all had those experiences, right? Sometimes you remember really well. Other times your memory is terrible. So why is that? And the Buddha says the reason is when you're mind is full of, the word he uses, defilements. When your mind is full of defilements, it is very hard to remember anything at all. When your mind is clear, right, you have clarity about things, then the memory becomes far more powerful. So you will find that if your meditation is successful, and you come out of the other end, if you feel more peaceful, if you feel more at ease, if you feel more gentleness and kindness and all these kind of qualities, that's the sign that there are less defilements in the mind. And at that time, your memory would tend to be more powerful at that point. So let's check out your mind state, and then you will know roughly whether your memory is any good or not.
So leading on from that, could you have a situation where repressed memory syndrome, could that resurface again?
Sure,
And that could be detrimental in many cases, or in some cases.
Yeah, it's true. It depends how you deal with it, right? That's really the crucial issue there. So how you deal with that memory. But that is exactly, I think, what happens with some people. And they come memory surface from the past. And because of that, they actually feel terrible. And that's where the meditation, as you say, can really deteriorate. And you can actually, you can have panic attacks and all those kind of things happen right there in the meditation practice. So if that happens, it is better to open your eyes, think about what is going on, and then try to deal with it in a skillful way. So, don't. Sometimes, if you stay with it, it may be too hard to bear. If it is too hard to bear, don't try to bear it. Be sensible, right? Don't be kind of stupid about these issues. So then you have to deal with it. So if some kind of bad memory from the past surfaces, Usually, if you live a good life, if you do some meditation practice, you will generally be much more able to deal with these things than you otherwise would. Because you have more perspective, you have more understanding of what is going on, you have more ability to forgive the past, right? This is usually a problem. Problem is due to some kind of interpersonal thing. These are the most heavy, most difficult things to deal with. So if you have some kind of interpersonal thing arising from the past, then to forgive is far more easier once you have stability of mind, a sense of peace and clarity within yourself. So all of these things, all of the things you do as part of a Buddhist practice actually enables you to deal with all these kind of issues. Yes?
I have a comment on the duration of the meditation.
Yeah.
I mean, we do half an hour here.
Yeah.
And for the young ones,
yeah,
when you start 2 minutes, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You might have to sit for half an hour.
Yeah, sure. True, yeah. I don't really have much experience with, you know, meditation for different age groups. I don't really know if, you know, when you're 2 years old you can sit for 2 minutes, when you're five for 5 minutes or whatever. I'm sure if it works like that. But basically, just do what you enjoy, you know. And just get some good instructions. If you enjoy it, it's great. And then when you don't enjoy it anymore, don't do it. The surest way of getting to hate meditation is to do something you don't like. Yeah, right? That's the surest way. that's not such a good idea. Of course, you try a little bit. And then,
because they have sessions for the young ones at Malamara every Saturdays.
Dharma school.
Yeah.
Yes,
I don't know. Do I do meditation there?
I don't know.
I'm not
sure.
Meditation.
All I've ever seen is the play.
Yeah. I think they're just having a good time, basically. Well, meditation, of course, could be part of that. Yeah. So.
5 or 10 minutes would be reasonable for any age.
Yeah,
as
it
a
is.
A beginner.
It's very, very true, actually. Yeah. Very true. Very good point. I think it's important to understand that when we do half an hour here, half an hour is quite a long period, for especially for beginners. So any time that works for you, right? When you go back home, it's much more difficult to meditate at home than it is in a group when you have like a group energy around you. So when you go back home, even if you can just sit peaceful for 10 minutes, actually you feel much better afterwards as a consequence. So even that is very useful. So whatever you find enhances your day, makes your day go easier, it gives you a bit of support in being, you know, kind and generous and things to people around you, is very useful. People often ask, people often overestimate the power of meditation itself, but there are things, according to Buddha, that are actually much more important than the meditation practice. And those that are more important is how you live your life is far more important, because that is the basis for meditation. If you take away the foundation, meditation itself is not going to work. However, if you just have the foundation, well, at least you have that, right? So it's important not to build the superstructure first and then the foundation afterwards, or forget about the foundation. Mm-hmm. Build the foundation first, then you can build the kind of the rest of the structure later on. And the foundation in Buddhism is all about kindness. Be kind to people through your bodily actions, be kind to people through speech, be kind to people how you think. And if you can do that, wow, then you are really changing your life and also changing the life of people around you. This is the most important thing of all. And then meditation can be used to enhance that, and eventually meditation gets supported by that, and it takes that whole process even further. This is so important. One of the things that I thought I was going to talk about karma tonight, but it never happens. That's okay. Because I remember, that's probably a bit too late now, but I remember we had I had a question about karma here some months ago, and I didn't really answer it all that well. I thought I didn't answer it enough anyway. But one of the great things about this Buddhist idea of karma, have you heard about the idea of karma? Called karma, sometimes called karma. So the idea of karma is the idea that if you do certain things, you get results back, right? So if you do good things, you tend to get good results back. Do bad things, you get bad results back. Sometimes this is a bit theoretical. People think, what does it actually mean to get good things back, right? How does this actually work? So as with all things, instead of making it theoretical, make it very practical. So what I wanted to show you very briefly is how to understand karma in a very practical way. And this ties in with this idea of being kind and actually being able to do the right thing in life. One thing I'd like you to notice, if you can, in your life in general, when you do an act of goodness, right? You suddenly would just want to be kind to somebody and you do something kind. How do you feel at that moment? You feel good, right? You feel really good about yourself. You feel so light and easy, you feel so happy about everything. Yeah. So if you, the more you notice that, the more, this is karma in action, right? You do something good, you feel good about yourself. This is karma in this very life, right here, right now. And you are lifting up your mind as a consequence, and you can actually see that you're lifting up your mind as a consequence. Alternatively, if sometimes you may slip up a little bit, you may do something bad, right? Or even have a bad thought. How does that feel? Right? If it doesn't feel good, right? If you do something bad to somebody else, if you watch your mind very carefully, even having a bad thought can be enough. You can feel that your energy is drained. It drains your energy. You feel you don't feel good. You feel bad about yourself afterwards. It's like you are pushing, or you are kind of lowering your mind down, pushing your mind down. So this is basically karma. And the more clearly you can see that, you can start to understand the power of morality, the power of kindness, the power of goodness. Every time you do something good, you're lifting yourself up. You can feel it happening. Every time you're doing something bad, you're kind of putting on the sandbag is on your balloon and kind of holding it down on the ground. It doesn't have a chance to soar anymore. So be clear about that. And once the more clarity you have about that, the more important you can see, the more easily you can see how important it is to do what is good in this world and to avoid doing the bad things. It becomes a very, very useful lesson to you, a very powerful lesson. And then it becomes so much easier to sustain the kindness in the world, to be kind to people, and to avoid, even in difficult situations, to avoid saying the bad thing, even thinking the bad thought. And you withdraw from that, and you incline towards goodness instead. Because this is basically what karma is all about. The more you build up those good qualities, you create a beautiful mind for yourself, you take that beautiful mind with you into the future. Do bad stuff, you create a mind which is more heavy, less energetic, less joyful, and you take that with you into the future. It's very easy to see when you start to understand the mind properly. And then you get this boost of, wow, yes, this is what I got to do. And it makes it so much easier. You need that. We need to... difficult to be always be kind, right? It's very, very hard. Almost nobody can do that. And because it is so hard, we need to use all those tools that are available at our disposition to be able to do that. Anyway, I think maybe we should call it an evening. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. So,